On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard this episode of The Fish. We take you on an angling adventure to an island and let a wallaby hop free on this island fishing paradise. Mark Gerrard played 23 tests for Australia and is a great mate of rugby mad Big Fish regular John Stinker Clark and a very, very keen fisherman. After a long and successful Super Rugby career with the Waratahs, Melbourne Rebels, and winning titles with the Brumbies, scoring a hat-trick of tries in their grand final win and also representing Tonga and Australia in rugby league at a schoolboy level, Mark played and coached for 9 years in Japan, immersing himself in their unique fishing culture and their language, as you'll find out when you meet this real ocean man. That's our first cast as we go live to Broughton Island on The Big Fish.
Well, salad with it.
It's The Big Fish. Here we are back at Esmeralda Cove after a big day on the water, battling huge seas, fighting giant fish. Mark Gerrard, what did you think of the day?
I think the weather won out. It was beautiful. I loved it. This is awesome. Like, I haven't been trying to get up here for the last 5 years with John Clark, but just haven't really had a chance. And so, I kind of took it on this year to go, you know what? As soon as Stinker said it to me, I'm like, we're done, we're out, I'm going. And even my wife pushed me out the door. So I think just got to appreciate more what we have in our backyard. And I enjoy my fishing. I teach my boys how to do it. Probably not very well, but hey, we have a go.
Gee, we learn a bit from Laurie today. Take us through that experience.
I thought I was the king of Narrabin. Trying to put pillies on hooks, mate. I had no idea after today, which is awesome, though, because the way that I was doing them was probably only for my area in a small little patch, but in the way you should do them out in the open water, mate, awesome. Just simple things like that and learning different techniques and, you know, learning from really good people, I think it only adds to sort of the growth of what fishing is, especially in the industries. Like, I've learnt a lot today just regarding, you know, like, your bag catching, to how many you're allowed, to sizes, to, you know, just the rules and probably the intricacies of fishing is awesome, which I underestimated. But I appreciate it a whole lot more, always have, but get me home, you found a respect for what the game is actually all about. But it's enjoyable because I want to pass that on to my boys.
Yeah. Laurie, very experienced fisherman. John, very experienced fisherman. You just and they love passing on that knowledge, don't they? It was really lovely. He was baiting us up, and the fish were on thick and fast. Not big ones this time, pan sized fish, and you can hear them. I'll just go over to John. You can hear them sizzling in the pan at the moment. Can you hear that? Gee, that looks fantastic, Stinker. What have you done there, mate?
Well, this is cheap batter. Batter mix from the supermarket. You add water and then you stir it to the right consistency, and then you drop your fresh fish in, and then you drop it in hot oil, and then when it sizzles and goes brown, out it comes. Ready to serve.
Gourmet stuff. Look at that. Beautiful fillets of snapper. Five minutes ago it was in the water.
Here you got to eat. Lads, sit down, eat it straight away while it's nice and crispy.
It's The Big Fish, recorded live on Broughton Island. And coming up, you'll meet former top-end professional fishing guide Laurie Chatter, who's got some great stories to tell and was fantastic in putting us on the fish. And, of course, the inimitable Stinker. But after a huge mound of fresh, succulent snapper fillets straight out of the ocean and straight into the frying pan and cooked beautifully by Stinker, enough to even satisfy Mark Gerrard's muscular 120-kilo frame, we adjourn to the beach to get to know the keen fishing footballer a little better. It's The Big Fish, and we're sitting on the beach at Broughton after a huge feed of fresh snapper and just listening to the sea lap against the shore of Esmeralda. Stunning, beautiful, emerald green
Aqua Blue Cove. It was a gorgeous day with Mark Gerrard. Now, the people who follow rugby might remember Mark as a Wallaby and a terrific player in the Super Rugby, and he's played all over the world. Now the coach of the Warringah Rats, who were the premiers in the Sydney Rugby Union. Wash my mouth out. Mark, but you love your fishing and grew up around Narrabeen Lake, I believe.
Yes, I appreciate for having me here. No, we, mate, this place is amazing. If you ever get a chance to get to Broughton Island or experience Port Stephens, this place is, oh my gosh. I'm glad I've been coming up here for the last 20 years with my family. But no, for me, you know, I grew up in Narrabeen, always got brought up around the water, so surf and fish as a kid, and any opportunity I got, I was generally out in the water, and it was mainly just because I used to love the ocean. I love the salt water on my skin. I love the smell of it. Even when you wake up and you get that sort of sea mist where we were at the northern beaches, I used to just enjoy smelling that as well in the morning. But no, I was a big fan as a kid growing up. I used to, man, I would have been about 8 or 9 years old up from where I lived on Lowell Street. Used to run up Tourmaline in a pair of boardies in winter and go spearfishing, hand spearfishing by myself behind the waves. And mate, I just remember that as a kid, and it's something that I've always wanted to share with my kids, just to enjoy what we actually have in our backyard, because I've been very fortunate enough to travel around the world and experience a lot of beaches and a lot of like exotic places. But for me, for what we have here and what we actually have in our backyard and what I had in my backyard, North Narrabeen Beach and that in general, and Narrabeen Lake, that's it. I caught my first fish in there, and it was a brim. I think it was the size of my hand, threw it back, and then I actually went out and spearfished, I think, 3 days later, and caught my first fish out in the open ocean behind the waves, and it was actually a whiting. So for me, it was just, you know, simple things that I really, really enjoyed. And I've always been one to be, you know, I say this lightly for me, but just really sort of simple, and I like the basic things in life. And for me, that's to have my family around, my family to experience probably the simplistic version of what life actually has to offer. And you know, we've got a lot of it here in Australia, and for me, I really enjoyed that part of it, and that's being in the water, going fishing. And it was always, and I was always taught from my father and my uncles were, if I'm going to catch fish, obviously legally sized, is that I had to prepare it and get it all ready, and that would, I'd bring that home. And that was sort of the general rule of thumb. And you know, I'd always be quite conscious if I was spearfishing, not to get certain fish. And, you know, if I wasn't there for the right reasons, don't bother. But same as fishing, where if I didn't catch a fish all day, I would have been just as happy, because, you know, that part for me, I really enjoyed. And, you know, my wife always says I'm not that patient, but I enjoyed fishing because sometimes you have to be patient.
Yeah, so that's right. And you were talking about one of your young blokes, you've got four kids, and you love them all dearly, but one of your youngsters is a really keen fisherman. He stays out all night on the beach to catch mulloway. He caught a beautiful one at the mouth of the Hawkesbury over your minor way, Pearl Beach Way, and just loves it. It's interesting, of course, you have Tongan heritage, don't you? And you lived right on the sea as a little kid. You weren't there for too long. I believe you came to Australia very young, but you know, you think there's something in your veins there, living off the sea, like back home in Tonga.
Yeah, like it's funny, like, and that's just not Tonga. Like a lot of the Polynesian sort of communities, because we are on an island, a lot of our trips are to the water, and you know, that's generally fishing or whatever you needed to do in and around that sort of space, and that's the ocean. And so the ocean always spoke to me as a kid. Being born here in Australia, then moved over to Tonga, then coming back as a young kid, it was the ocean that always sort of centred me and gave me my sacred grounding. I grew up surfing and fishing as a kid, and you know, I'm loving my... We have four kids. We've got two boys, our eldest and youngest, and the two girls in the middle, and you know, they love the ocean. And we have a yearly family trip. We get up to Treachery Camp, and We sort of fish and swim out there. We pretty much camp there for a week and just enjoy.
I think we could see it from when we're out the back of the island of catching snapper today. I think we could see treachery almost, couldn't we?
I didn't even know it was that close to here.
So when
we went around that, around that point, and you're like, oh, there's still rocks. I went, is it that close? So, you know, for what, as I said, like what we've got in our backyard and what I would like to give my family and give my kids that experience of just, you know, some of the great things we have in our backyard. You know, I'd love the experience to take them over to Western Australia and experience that whole region. Same thing as getting up to Darwin and experiencing that, even up to the Cape. I'd love to get them camping up to the Cape and fishing up there. Like, you know, for me, I'm still wrapping my head around what we have here, and I'm only 2.5 hours from home, so to speak. So I'm up and down here a fair bit. I was up Noosa last week at a job site, but and again, first thing I did was get to the ocean and feel the sand on my feet. But for me, the ocean says a lot. The ocean does a lot for me, and I know that being close to the water has always had something in it for me. And every time there's probably, you know what, there's been times in my life through my career, through my wife and I even, like we've actually gone, hey, let's just walk up to the beach. And we've just sat there, haven't said a word. We've probably been up for an hour or so, and we'd sit there, not say a word, and give each other a kiss and then walk home. And that's just something that the ocean does to a lot of people, and that was for me.
And you love your fishing, and you spent a long time in Japan playing and coaching as a professional rugby union player. And I believe you caught some good fish over there too. You enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was. And again, that's a different experience fishing over there because, you know, you could picture the Japanese, and I got some really good close mates, and I'll laugh at this, but I call them all the gear, no idea. And so they would have like these booties, but we're fishing on a wharf. Like we're not even getting in the water. So they'd have these booties on, these, you know, Shimano pants on and jackets and coats, and then they've got this vest with pockets with sleeves and hats on. And
I don't think we've even worn shoes for the last 2 days.
And they've seen me walk. I remember this. They saw me walk around the corner. I had board shorts on. I had my board shorts on. I had a pair of thongs, fishing rod in my hand, and I had a backpack, just some gear in it. And they looked at me like, what are you doing? I'm like, aren't we going fishing? They're like, yeah, but why are you dressed like that? And I'm like, this is how I go fishing. And we actually went out to where we were based in Nagoya. We went out towards the airport. And if you know a lot of the airports, there's obviously a lot of lights. And so where we were, there's actually a ship port directly behind the airport area. And it shuts at 7:30 at night. But they leave the lights on the wharf and on the dock. So the lights attract a lot of the bugs and a lot of those sort of insects that actually fly on the water and be around that area. And we're fishing for saltwater bass.
Yeah, right.
And so for me, it's a new experience because I never really did this before. And a lot of it is lure fishing and different types of lures and tried a few little sort of things. And I ended up having a couple of floaty sort of poppers.
Surface lures.
With some ball bearings in them so that would vibrate when I'd wind them in slowly. And so I'd cast them out. We actually got like 3 or 4 one night. And the boys were just like over the moon that this happened. We went back. This would have been like 11 o'clock at night. We went back to one of the Japanese guys' houses, and he woke up his wife, and I was like, oh mate, what are you doing? Woke up his wife, and she came out and prepared this meal for us for like 45 minutes. And I was like, I felt guilty, but oh my gosh, it was an experience. And that's what fishing can do to a lot of people, and they love it. And when I brought them over here, I actually brought one of my Japanese mates. You're not stinking this. I actually brought him up here. He went fishing. His name is Yuga Kurihara. We went fishing in Stinker's little
stink pot. He's a rugby player?
No, he was our translator.
Oh, right.
So he came up with us. We went out of Fingal Head. 3 dolphins jumped past us, and he went, oh, how amazing is this? And as we went around the corner, he caught the first snapper, and we had it that night.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was just an experience like that. And, mate, Fingal's, not even Fingal, Port Stephens, New South Wales East Coast we have, but just Australia in general. Yeah. This place is something special, and, you know, I want to make sure that my kids appreciate what we have actually got. And, but fishing for me has been a huge part of my life. My son turned 21 3 weeks ago, and he hit me up. And he's like, Dad, I'm not too sure what to get. And I said, why don't I get you a new set of gear? And he's just like, oh, yeah.
Is that the rod you're using up here?
Yeah. So I actually borrowed it. He doesn't know that yet. Hope he's not listening. But no, I got him a great 10-foot rod, and got him a nice 6,500 Shimano sort of set up for him.
Yeah.
And he loves his sort of beach and rock fishing with extended sort of arm on it. And, mate, it's lightweight, but it just packs a good punch. And, mate, I enjoy it. I'm just happy that my kids enjoy the ocean. I'm glad that my boys have taken on the fishy smell in their hands when they go fishing, thank God.
Mark Girard, it's been great fun fishing with you and just the joy. And I think the great thing about you two, that some people make it so stressful. You know, it's about joy and fun and relaxation, and catching a fish is a bonus, and we're in a beautiful environment. This place is just another world, the Myall Lakes National Park, and the water's so good, and the fish, we had the best feeder snapper tonight. I'm just stoked, and tomorrow we're going to catch some more and have more tales to tell.
Oh, I look forward to this conversation tomorrow night, but yes, I actually look forward to what's to come tomorrow. So
I reckon the trophy snapper is just one bite away for you.
Oh, I'd like to think so, but I think my snapper today, well, it wasn't too big, but hey, you know what? It tastes good.
Oh, gee, they tasted good. Those plate-sized snapper, they're all right, mate, aren't they?
Oh, mate, they're delicious.
That was a good meal.
I haven't had it on a simple bit of bread with a bit of coleslaw. I was like, this is the greatest meal I've ever had.
That was the best fish sandwich in the history of the world, wasn't it?
Oh, it was awesome, especially when you're hungry on a day like today.
Anyway, the bunk's beckoning. We've got to go to sleep. I do snore. Apologies, Mark, but you'll be right. You'll sleep tight tonight.
Well, I'll race you to bed first, then. Thanks for having me.
It's the Big Fish and Mark Girard there, famous wallaby and famous fisherman, and his son's 21st birthday fishing outfit has never seen a bend like the one that a monster, a huge snapper, put into it on Dusk on our last night at sea. But that's a tale for a little later on in this episode of The Big Fish. And I tell you what, it was pretty handy to have a bloke with Mark's immense strength, huge 120-kilo frame. We were trolling around one of the washy headlands with the hope of getting a bonito or something like that for bait. And I had two skirted lures out. Laurie Chatter with his famous skirted lure rig. He's an innovator. And got a nice salmon, about 4 kilos. And just near the boat, another one decided to grab it. It was about 2 kilos. So that was a handful. And Mark, with his immense strength, was able to net the two of them in one go and hoist them aboard. So it was handy to have a big fella about. More adventures on Broughton Island coming up with the Wallaby at sea and Stinker. And Mark Chatter joins us as well, a great fisherman from the Port Stephens area, who was part of our team as we took to the high seas to tackle the giant snapper of the reefs off Port Stephens. It's the Big Fish Broughton Island special. We'll catch up with more members of the crew. Stinker and Laurie Chatter joins us. Laurie's got some great stories to tell from the top end and fishing all over New South Wales as well. It's all coming up on The Big Fish.
There are giants out there in the canyons. There
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
The Boozers Creek Outback Fishermen's Club hadn't seen rain in years, so they boarded a bus without any fuss. Their eskies held 10,000 beers. Bound for the coast were a good dozen starters to fish the deep sea with Dodgy Dick's charters. They arrived at the port already half dusted. Most wouldn't have caught the skin off a custard. Out through the heads and all went well until they encountered a 6-metre swell. Still they ploughed through the lager without any fear, but the catch of the day would be mal de mer. It was Charles Chuck Berry, first to provide a trail of fresh burley heaved over the side. It brought on the snapper, which came out of the reef. Then Chuck hurled so hard he spat out his false teeth. Through the depths sinking, his fangs spiraled down, while the green-gilled old bushy watched on with a frown. Said club captain Mick, with a wink to his mates, "Watch this for a laugh, it's gonna be great." He whipped out his falsies, pearly white and fine, and when Chuck's back was turned, tied them onto his line. Mick lifted his rig, a paternoster, two droppers, and said with surprise, "Chuck, I've just caught your choppers." Old Chuck snatched them quickly, right out of Mick's grasp, and between his bare gums, the teeth he did clasp. With a garbled sea curse and an almighty spit, he cried, "Those aren't my dentures, they do bloody fit." But before Mick could count from 1 to 3, Chuck hurled the false teeth back into the sea. The Boozers Creek boys were now splitting their sides. All the while, the fetching swell rose with the tide. Oblivious to all, Chuck re-emptied his tummy, while Mick looked on crestfallen, forlorn, po-faced and gummy.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
It's the Big Fish. John, we're sitting here at Esmeralda Cove, and like a couple of old pirates. But the gulls we can hear in the background, they're all perched on this white cliff top right next to us, a small cliff. It's quite vertical. You were saying that that used to look very different.
Oh, most certainly. Back in 1906, there were 5 established buildings on that knoll. And they were built for French researchers to establish a method of eradicating rabbits on the mainland. It sounds
like an extraordinary place to have a research station. But if you think about it, we're on an island, so the rabbits can't go anywhere, really. So they're under total control of the scientists. Now, they were trying to find something like myxomatosis, and they didn't.
That's the sound of the Marine Rescue Base that's here as well. It's a very important place for boating safety, isn't it?
Oh, most certainly. And that's the first thing you need to consider when you're coming to Broughton Island. But just back to the rabbits for a little while. What happened at the end of 1906, around about November, the French gave up. They realised that they couldn't find a virus that would transfer from one rabbit to another, and so their mission failed. So they packed up and left, but the rabbits didn't. In fact, they thrived, and it was only recently that National Parks and Wildlife said enough's enough, and they got rid of the rabbits themselves. And, oh, look, it's a great story. The whole Broughton Island story is one of magnificent history, because the Chinese were here, the Italians were here in the 1800s to catch lobsters for the Sydney market. The Greeks played a big, big part in Broughton Island up until, well, they arrived here after the First World War, and they've all left, and there's really no sign of them. Or in Nelson Bay, they didn't have family, they just left, but they left an indelible imprint on the history of Broughton Island.
Stinker, the weather's been spectacular. The sun's just rising up over the hill in front of us, and the cove is shimmering silver, and the sunset last. Oh, look at that. Just describe the scene there. That's huge.
Well, what we're looking at now is a monster, an absolute monster stingray that is in around about 6 inches of water, so its back is out of the water, and it's flapping along the shoreline. It's been well fed in the last few days, and if stingrays have got brains, that's for sure, because I know that if they come along the shoreline, that occasionally they're going to get skeletons of fish that have we've had on the island. But also we've been visited, Scott, by a Wobbegong shark. And he's been here with us. He's become a pet, basically.
He was amazing, wasn't he? He's a great, big, beautiful beast of a thing. And he decided to live under Stinkbug, your boat, in... He was coming into 3 inches of water.
Yeah, and his back was out of the water. They know they're safe. There's nothing that threatens them. Mm. And so they just live here in an idyllic situation. And I must say, and we've been incredibly fortunate over the last few days, the conditions have been A1, absolutely perfect. And that's not something that you can always organise. We sailed up here in a southerly wind, and we're returning home in a northerly wind. So we don't get anything better than that.
Hey, have you ever seen anything better than that sunset last night? I saw something last night that'll be indelibly driven into my brain. You just had your head down for a sec helping Mark Gerard rig, and your rod, it buckled to the water. The gunwale of the boat exploded. I mean, that was the biggest hit I've ever seen. I guess, you know, sometimes in the big fish, we've got to talk about the one that got away.
Yes, I do not like to ponder on the one that got away, but I can't get it out of my mind. It's just a massive snapper is what it was. We caught some beautiful snapper since we've been here. We've caught some beautiful snapper and had an amazing time. But last night, just on sundown, shortly before sundown, I was preoccupied doing something else, fiddling around as I do, and the rod just smashed. They always smacked, and it was you know, it's hard to say, but you know, it could be a snapper up to 10 kilo. You wouldn't know. You'll never will know, But that's not quite the end of the story, Scott, because not long after, and I was sort of sitting there in a glum, having lost a beautiful fish, Mark had the same experience, and he hooked a monster that absolutely flattened him too. And when your rod gets flattened, you know you're in for a real tussle. Well, what happened is that he got it within 5 metres of the boat and the hook pulled. So that was that. Mm. So we looked at Mark and Mark looked at me and said, that's fishing.
And Stinker, that sunset last night while the action was on, and you did boat some lovely snapper, so, you know, it wasn't the end of the world, but we'll get over it. There were fires across Tea Gardens Way, and that sun was a pink-orange orb as it just disappeared behind Port Stephens. It was probably the most beautiful sight I've ever seen. I mean, that's a great thing about an island, too. And we had some good variety. You got... Laurie got a huge drummer with you. You took him to the washers and did a bit of wash fishing. You got a monster brim in the washers. We got some lovely flathead. We got two varieties of flathead, dusky and the deep sea flathead. We've got some brim and tarwine and whiting and dart and all sorts of weird things walking the beaches here because Mark's just so keen on fishing that when you blokes went out in the boat, we went over the backside and walked that crystal clear, beautiful beach. Is there a more beautiful beach in Australia? And the water's turquoise blue, the sand is pure white, and the fish just teem along there.
Yeah, and whiting through the summer months, but it's snapper. That's the iconic Broughton Island fish. When you think of Broughton Island, you think of snapper. And there are snapper from Seal Rocks right down to Cod Rock, where we fished last night on the south side. But you mentioned the stunning sunset. Well, what I see when the sun goes down and I'm on the water and I look back towards the mainland, and I see these magnificent shapes from Fingal through Tomaree and Yacabar and Stevens Peak and at the entrance to Port Stephens. And then we look along further north and there's the Bulladilla Ranges and the beautiful beach that runs from Hawk's Nest right through to the Little Gibber and from the Little Gibber further north again to the Big Gibber and Yagan.
And all nature. All nature.
And you don't see a car or a vehicle of any kind. There's no houses, nothing. Yeah. And just beautiful sand dunes and mountains.
Yeah, it was bloody lovely. It was really it's been a great couple of days. I just can't... thank you enough, mate. It's been a beautiful experience again. It's something really special, and the fishing is a bonus. I mean, it really is. This national park is just magnificent, and you've always said that you've seen great improvement as well. Does it keep getting better?
Oh, yes, it does, because national parks are doing a great job out here. National parks sometimes get pilloried for, you know, all sorts of reasons. But what they're doing on Broughton Island is really quite extraordinary. And it's showing with the amount of birds and the vegetation is all coming back. And it's in prime, pristine condition at the moment. And it's very welcoming. But we always go back to one issue, and that's safety. So if you're considering visiting Broughton Island, make sure that you register with the Coastal Patrol, the Sea Rescue, Marine Rescue, and clock on and clock off, and that will keep you safer. And because safety is the major factor, because that 14 kilometres between here and the mainland, the entrance to Port Stephens, can turn extremely nasty in a very short period of time.
Yeah, and you're way out at sea, aren't you? All of a sudden you realise that you're on your own. And as you can hear from the bird life, it's a twitcher's paradise as well. We're very amateur bird watchers, but, you know, the osprey, we saw an osprey yesterday sitting on one of the penguin signs right next to us. Those sooty oyster catchers are just amazing with their bright red eyes and beaks. We saw little tiny shorebirds that were skittering across like I don't know what they were. I'll go and get the bird book when I get back. But, you know, they're protected here and there are no cats or foxes and things. So you see a lot more, don't you? And the little penguins, we had a penguin swimming around the boat and saying g'day. They're coming back. I mean, it's just nature's paradise.
Well, the apex predator, of course, is the sea eagle. And they hover over everything as if they're guarding the place. But I must make mention of another friend we brought over, Laurie Chatter. Laurie is a gun fisherman, particularly snapper. And his methods and my methods are different, that we fish differently, but we generally get the same result. And that is quality cracker snapper, and we have quite a beautiful bag to take home to the family. So all in all, it's just been a magnificent experience with perfect conditions, with great company, and a trip that I won't forget.
Good on you, Stinker. We better pack up and load the boats and head for home, head back for port.
Yeah, that's what it is, and a nice leisurely ride back home. And, of course, we're surrounded by dolphins, the amount of dolphins in the water. They're a common dolphin. They're not the bottlenose dolphin that reside inside Port Stephen. They're a smaller dolphin, and by gee, there's plenty of them. Yeah. But, yeah, we'll have a safe trip home and a lovely experience. What a great time.
All ships, all ships. This is Marine Rescue Lemon Tree Passage, Victor, Mike, Romeo 26. Rescue Lemon Tree Passage, Victor, Romeo 265. The current temperature for the forecast and marine weather warning will follow on VHF channel 67
and 27 megahertz channel 86. Changing channels now. On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi.
Up next on The Big Fish, we head back to Broughton Island with local Laurie Chatter, who might be well known to Sydney folks because he was a clock and watchmaker in George Street, moved to Willoughby, and then decided to become a top-end fishing guide with a 75-foot mothership and four tinnies and guides and up the remote creeks for barramundi, dodging the crocs and catching huge Spanish mackerel and dodging cyclones. Incredible change of scenery, really, from a watchmaker in Sydney to a professional fishing guide captain, and we'll catch up with him. He got us onto some great fish as well at Broughton Island, some different methods to Stinker's wash fishing as well, but a lot of fun. That's up next on The Big Fish.
Been a long time since I've been down to the crawling hole. Well, I caught a lot of minnows. Sure was nice and sweet. Caught a lot of minnows. Sure was nice and sweet. Now the pond gone dry. I can't get no more eat. Well, my buddy had me. What are you gonna do now the pond's gonna dry? Then my buddy asked me, what are you gonna do now the pond's gonna dry? I said, I'm gonna sit on the bank and watch the crawdad die. Well, I'm buying a little sailboat, take a trip across the deep blue sea. Take a trip from the deep blue sea. Well, if you want to have some fun, come go sailing with me. All righty. then I'm gonna sit on the bank and watch the crawdad die. I'll buy me a little sailboat, take a trip across the deep blue sea. Buy me a little sailboat, take a trip across the deep blue sea. If you want to have some fun, come go sailing with me. Well, all righty.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Laurie, thanks for a great day. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. Fantastic. I love your methods. Take us through your fishing for snapper.
Well, thank you for that. One, from there, sort of snapper fishing can be complicated or simple depending on the fish. You know, it depends whether they want to behave and play the game or not. But it's a matter of sort of saying we know what works sometimes and sometimes it doesn't. So you've got to be prepared to change your game or move positions depending whether they're in shallow water or deeper water. And just keep thinking, what can we do to make it better when you're fishing?
Shallow water snapper, very exciting, very exciting. Do you think a lot of people fish too heavy? Because I think when you think snapper fishing, you think, you know, giant leads and deep drops, whereas it's vastly different the way you and Stinker do it.
Yeah, from there, if you are fishing in the deeper water, you do need a Paternoster or snapper lead into the deeper water because the floating baits won't get in there. But in the shallow water, the less lead you can use in float baits is far more productive in shallow water. And in shallow water, we're talking sort of 10 to 30 metres of water. That is the way to go. The minimum lead and keep the bait naturally floating through the water column.
Tell you what, we had a lot of fun catching bait, catching slimy mackerel, yellowtail and all the rest of it. We use pilchards too. You know, you're happy to put a pilchard on.
Yeah, again, as I said, fresh bait's the best bait. And if you can certainly use the fresh bait that's in the local area, whether it be the mackerel or squid or whatever's there, that's good. But the old humble pilchard still produces the goods no matter where you go. I think it's a lot to do with the oil content in them and the natural flash that they give off when they flutter down through the water column. So the pilchard's a good backup all the way around.
But you do something to it, don't you, that you're not putting on a whole pilchard?
No, I tend to try and rig my pilchard up so that it floats naturally, but I also pinch the tail off for three reasons. One, that it lets out the oil, which becomes its own natural burly trail. Second, it looks like some other fish has bitten it off, and that's why it's sinking. And thirdly, when it does sit in the current, it doesn't spin. It sits flat in the current if there's current there. So there's three good reasons to snap the tail off.
Trouble is, Laurie, I've got pilchard all under my thumbnails now from your technique, and we don't have any fresh water here. We're rationing, so we're all going to stink for the next couple of days.
Yeah, well, I suggest when you eat dinner, you use a knife and fork too. Don't eat with your fingers.
Hey, what do you think of that feed of fish, speaking of eating?
Oh, look, Stinker's the best. He's the best cooker for fresh fish and straight.
My mother is.
Oh, my mother is.
The best cooker.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you're the second best because that was absolutely delicious, yeah.
And you're civilised. I'm really happy to have you here because I've been here before and it's been a bit rough and ready, but we've got a lovely white wine with the fish. I mean, you're a very sophisticated man, Laurie.
We're having a Taylor Chardonnay with our snapper fillets, and life doesn't get much better than that.
Hey, how good's this? I finally found someone with a bit of class.
On a remote island, stuck away.
Hey, you're an interesting chap. I was asking John what you did, and you were had a clock and watch making business in George Street, is that right?
Yeah, sort of one of my days in Sydney was running a clock repair business and antique clock sales, and had a shop in the Queen Victoria building and a town hall station. And that was my go-to for the money market down in Sydney. But I'm glad I'm out of that now.
So that drove you cuckoo, did it?
Yes, it drove me very cuckoo.
But where did you go after that? Because that was a big sea change.
And then we decided we wanted to move to Port Stephens and live, so I had to find another career. So we ended up doing mothership tours and fishing out of Darwin for 7 years while we relocated. And that was another great adventure in the time up there in the top end.
And a 75-foot mothership with four tinnies sounded like heaven. I bet you caught some barramundi.
Yeah, we had a lot of good fishing for barramundi in the creeks, and also the blue water fishing out the front. And it was the exploring and adventure of the top end with the crocodiles and the wildlife. And really appreciated that time up there. Learned a lot. Totally different to fishing down south, but we had a lot of fun up there. Yeah.
You took Craig McGill out. What was it like guiding the guide? I believe he was very demanding.
Craig's a lovely guy, and he's an expert in what he does, and Sydney Harbour's his forte from there. But he's very versatile, and he enjoys his fishing no matter where he goes. And he had a good time up there, and we ate a few crabs and caught a few fish. Had a good time.
Yeah. Didn't he put the acid on you and say, "I want to be stopped by eating mud crabs"? You had to sort of rise to the challenge?
Yeah, he was very keen on the mud crabs, and and again, we made sure we had some mud crab entree every night before dinner. Yeah, it was a lot
of
fun.
You took him to a secret spot, you told me.
Yes, I did, yeah. We went to an area that you actually could scoop the mud crabs up with a net rather than putting traps out when the water was clear at low tide. So that was a bit of a special adventure for us. Yeah.
Was that wading the flats, was it?
Or? Just walking through the low water tide in clear water.
What about the big crocodilians?
They were there. You had to have a good lookout. That was part of the adventure, you might say. Yeah.
Well, Laurie, we're having a great adventure. Off to catch snapper at dawn tomorrow with you, and we might do a bit of a drift for some sand flathead, and then we've noticed that there are a lot of whiting on the beaches over the backside of the island, so we're going to try to tempt some of those beautiful fish. It's just fantastic.
It is, and as I said, it's a challenge wherever you go chasing fish, but we'll be doing our best to get another feed tomorrow night, so Stinker can cook us up another yummy meal, all right?
That was great. Well done, John. Round of applause for the chef.
Hey!
Salamander Bay fishing fanatic Laurie Chatter there, wrapping up our Broughton Island special on the big fish. Catch you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.